Hello everyone, my name is Rebecca Weicht and I'm a researcher at the Institut für Mittelstandsforschung in Bonn. Since 2020, the COVID-19 pandemic has affected SMEs worldwide in unprecedented ways. Today, we want to reflect on lessons learned and further challenges for SMEs and SME policy. At the International Roundtable on SMEs, 7 researchers from all over Europe presented their research studies. Professor Welter, you are the president of the Institut für Mittelstandsforschung here in Bonn and professor at the University of Siegen. How do you evaluate the support measures during the pandemic and what conclusions did you draw for future SME policy?
What I see when I look at the SME support and SME policies throughout the pandemic is a double face of the SME support measures, and which actually poses a challenge for future SME policies and policy making. The good is, of course, that the support measures saved companies and jobs, which was definitely necessary for the economic survival of SMEs and, of course, also for the people employed there and the entrepreneurs. The bad is that there is a distortion of competition. The structural change may have been postponed and blocked, and we don't know yet to what extent. There, of course, also is rising national debts, especially now I'm talking about Germany, which will pose potential restrictions on public investments, which are required for the future for the green and digital transition. There are SMEs' contributions to economy and society, which have been, which suffered throughout the pandemic as well. The regional distribution of SMEs, especially smaller SMEs, maybe those in integrated in value chains, has been distorted to some extent. The willingness for training, as we know from some data in Germany, where training of young people has been postponed, or future training of employees in the businesses has been postponed. And of course, there are the problems, especially the industry association representatives here amongst us know, with international value change, which actually has an impact on SME and entrepreneurship development. So, at the moment, I see 3 points as kind of initial lessons from the pandemic for SME policies, and would like us to keep those in mind for the discussions today. First, and I heard Dr. Heberle touching upon that to some extent, SME policies need much more of a cross-sectional or horizontal approach covering more than just the Ministry of Economics. The pandemic has been an excellent example because all of a sudden it was health policies and not economic policies, kind of conducting the behavior and the entrepreneurial behavior of SMEs, regulating SMEs activities and even shutting down activities in certain sectors. The second point goes to SME policy priorities, because I think what the pandemic has shown us that policies can be adjusted quickly. And it would be up to us to discuss, also from an academic point of view, how can we actually keep that momentum for policy making. I know that there's a discussion in Germany also around, okay, we left out parliament, which I don't mean when I say can the priorities can be adjusted quickly, but the momentum is rather important, because I think with the grand challenges we are facing, we need this policy quick momentum to change policy priorities. And the third lesson I see is the difficulties or the challenges in moving out of the pandemic mode of policy making for SME policy making, because we still have, and we don't know exactly for what time period, even though the support measures in Germany are restricted, I think till the end of this year or something, but we still have a need for kind of covering some of the support needs of SMEs more directly. So focusing on more immediate or continuous support, aiming at stabilizing businesses. Maybe it's medium term, maybe it's even longer term, we don't know that yet. But at the same time, we need policies, SME policies, which focus on recreating or strengthening SMEs' competitiveness so that they basically can innovate towards the twin transition, towards green transition, and actually also enabling them that they perceive structural changes and the ecological challenges not just as a burden, but also as an opportunity to continue their businesses in different ways.
Professor Kleever, you and your colleague Signe Løve-Nielsen from the University of Southern Denmark have conducted a representative business survey in Denmark. What did you find?
when the crisis became a reality and we started realizing this is going to be serious, Sune and I obviously thought like, well, a crisis is a threat and opportunity. It's an enabler and a disabler. So what's going to be really interesting to figure out is how the COVID-19 is going to make some businesses stronger and some weaker. And who's going to be the strong ones and who's going to be the weak ones? How can the weak ones turn into strong ones? So essentially, we were interested in that kind of diversity or heterogeneity that crisis kind of bring with it. And essentially, we were interested in the crisis outcome. So in the end of the crisis, when the crisis is over, what is the crisis outcome? So who's going to be the winners? Who's going to be the losers? And we essentially thought that three factors is going to matter here. First of all, the crisis preparedness. So how did the business look like when they stepped into the crisis? So how did the business look like before the crisis? Then it depends on the crisis strategies. That is, what did the businesses do during the crisis in order to adapt, stay, or whatever they did? And finally, we think this depends on how this crisis was like impact immediately when the crisis hit. We know that some industries were hit differently than others. So that immediate crisis impact mattered. And essentially, we talked about here crisis victims who suffered immediately with loss of turnover during the lockdown. And we talked about crisis immune businesses that was unaffected, and then crisis exploiters that actually experienced an increase in their turnover in the short lockdown period. So conclusion, crisis preparedness is important. First of all, for the immediate impacts, because crisis is heterogeneously, but not randomly. And especially financial preparedness is important for how you're impacted in the first phase. Crisis preparedness also matters because it matters for which strategies you are actually able to follow and choose. And thereby, crisis preparedness indirectly matters for the crisis outcome. The crisis strategies, regarding crisis strategies, people should try to avoid the retrenchment, especially survival retrenchment. And instead, they should pursue perseverance, innovation, or their combination.
Let us take a look at the UK. We welcome Professor Roper from the University of Warwick. What kind of government support has had a positive effect on companies?
So what we do here is we draw on an approach in the evaluation literature around behavioural additionality. This suggests that policy interventions like a furlough wage subsidy or the guaranteed loans which the UK government's put in place work through particular mechanisms, through particular sort of structures within the firm, logic models, theories of change, if you like, and they suggest some early behavioural indicators which might provide a bridge between the policy intervention and future productivity improvement. So here what we're going to do is we're going to look at the effect of government subsidies on firms' future investment intentions. And I think this links quite closely to some of the measures that Kim was referring to earlier in terms of the way in which the crisis might have affected firms' investment behaviour. So here we add something to Kim's explanation of why firms might be investing in different ways in the future. And we regard these investment intentions as a behavioural indicator of future productivity effects. I guess the theoretical arguments around what happens to investment in crises are a little conflicting. Some Schumpeterian models suggest lower factor prices might increase investment or increase the incentives to invest. On the other side, risks increase, credit constraints and lower returns might mean that firms actually retrench from investment. I think the empirics is pretty clearly on the second stage, so it tends to suggest the pro-cyclicality of investment, at least in the UK, and we've some evidence around both capital equipment and R&D and innovation, and I'll talk about both in a moment as we go along. So I guess that we're working against that evidence of pro-cyclicality. So for innovation, we find R&D and innovation, actually, we find positive effects from the wage subsidy, positive effects from the combination of the wage subsidy, but firms that only received loans, there was no significant innovation effect. More broadly, what we see, I think, is that a positive relationship between firms' receipt of these government supports for wage subsidies and loans, and a range of investment indicators. So it does look as if when firms received these government support measures, that was having a positive knock-on on investment intention.
What is your experience in Denmark, Professor Cleaver?
I think policy-wise, the most important thing here is not what to do when a crisis hits from a government perspective, but actually maybe focus on creating the financial preparedness in firms before it hits. And I, without being an expert in bank and financial institutions, I think this is what happened during the financial crisis. The requirement for banks and liquidity became larger, right? I'm not saying we should put on constraints on SMEs with regard to liquidity ratio, but I think it is about preparing small businesses financially for a crisis and make it obvious. And what I think right now is happening, like SMEs are forgetting all about this now. They're continuing a growth path, spending all their money on growth, and we know that we don't know if the next pandemic or version of COVID-19 hits next year. I think that's the problem. People think this was an exception and now it's over, and they do not financially prepare. And I think that could be a policy issue to raise that agenda. Then when the crisis then happened, who should governments actually then support and what should they support? I find it very interesting that Stephen found that some of the subsidiaries actually enabled firms to innovate, because I don't think that was the purpose. The purpose was to maintain, right? To make sure that firms didn't go bankrupt, so that they were here left when they were still here when the crisis is over. I think it's somehow strange if subsidiaries, government subsidiaries, are kind of like subsidiaries for innovation. But I think it makes sense it's subsidiaries for maintenance, as a maintaining firms.
The COVID-19 pandemic has accelerated the digital transformation. Professor Erik Stam, your research at Utrecht University in the Netherlands, what results did you find for the Netherlands?
We've seen that the crisis doesn't trigger new things, but accelerate, I think, both public opinion and also the uptake of technologies, and especially the digital transformation is, of course, high on our agenda, because people are much more used now to work at home, but also to sell at home, to buy at home, buy online, etc. So the question is, how can you get a grip on this? And at the regional level, we thought, well, the entry of web shops, we cannot wait for the crisis like in the 2008 crisis for 10 years to see what happened, but we can see what happened on a per month basis with respect to a digital transformation that seems to be accelerated, but in a heterogeneous way in the COVID-19 pandemic. So we looked at the entry of web shops, both in the business population and also at online platforms, and also asked the question, to what extent is this uptake, this digital transformation, enhanced by the quality of the entrepreneurial ecosystem, or doesn't the quality of the ecosystem matter? Is it just evenly spread around all the 40 city regions in the Netherlands? The COVID-19 pandemic favors the well-prepared regions and firms. That's a bit of an open door, but I think every crisis needs to measure this in different ways. And I think we are also measuring the quality of regions and firms now much better than we did 10 or 20 years ago. More in particular, the quality of the entrepreneurial ecosystem seems to positively affect the adaptiveness of regions. We studied this in the previous crisis as well. Then it took about 6 years, mind you, to recover from that. And we saw that the initial resistance was not helped by the quality of the ecosystem, but let's say the adaptiveness on the long term was. And now we didn't have the luxury to wait for such a long time. And in a sense, this crisis is much more hefty, so to say. So the digital transformation seems to be enabled by the quality of the entrepreneurial ecosystem in the Netherlands as well. If you look at the quality of management practices, there has been some Italian and Eastern European research on quality of management practices, and that showed that higher management quality leads to lower probability of exit and late payments. We especially look at the adaptiveness dimension, and we have showed that the quality of management practice seems to enhance the growth of online sales and also enhance innovative and new product development in the initial phase of the crisis.
Professor Damasius is a professor of entrepreneurship and family business policy at Freie University in Bozen, Italy. You conducted interviews with entrepreneurs about the COVID-19 pandemic. What did you learn?
This conversation with entrepreneurs led us to understand and to argue that actually many of the difficult and, you know, sometimes negative emotions and experiences that these people have been living have somehow led to rediscover more the past. I mean, these people, these leaders, and also their organization have started to look more backward. And so, you know, during uncertain times like the current ones, especially the old, the traditional values of the past can be, as it emerged from some direct quotes that we collected, as really, you know, an important compass that can be used to orient the behavior of the different stakeholders in an uncertain time. So we believe that, you know, there will be an increased mastering of such values. You know, people will be drawing more on their tradition, people and organizations, on their traditions, on their history. And we know that in Europe, we have a very long history, you know, across different entrepreneurial organizations. A second P that emerged from this, you know, conversation is people. I mean, during the last months, as we know, many business leaders felt the need to somehow redefine the relationship between the organization and the individual. We know that, you know, many workers have been asked to do extra sacrifices. Many workers, you know, human resources have been asked, for instance, to be more flexible, you know, to change their working habits, to start working in different ways. And by changing the way we work, we have also, to some extent, rediscovered the need for establishing superior employee relationships. So most of these, you know, entrepreneurs were saying that there will be, I mean, the relationship with their employees has become more empathic to some extent, but also a sort of relationship where the involvement of the employees at any level, the involvement of human resources at any level, becomes, you know, higher and higher in management processes, in decision processes. So we see a post-pandemic world where innovation and innovation management will be much more centered around people, where, you know, practices like talent nurturing, like advanced training, and also more openness toward external talents, external toward collaboration will be key in this new world. A third P is about processes. And again, you know, if we reflect on the pandemic, on the one hand, we know that for many SMEs across Europe, one key aspect, you know, of their competitive advantage is in their capacity to build and to develop personal and long-standing relationships. This is, you know, if you think about it, this is what, for instance, typically distinguishes an SMEs from like a huge player like Amazon, right? So of course there is heterogeneity across countries, with some countries like Italy where, you know, maybe this is can be more emphasized, but it's undeniable that, you know, for many SMEs, their capacity to build these and to develop these personal and long-lasting relationships has traditionally played a very important role for innovation. At the same time, we know that this pandemic has been experiencing the workers, you know, to practice, for instance, social distancing or remote working, you know, to use more digital technologies. We have been reading in several places that, you know, one of the indirect, you know, effects of this pandemic has been an acceleration towards the, you know, use of digitalized routines, etc. And what emerged from this conversation is that these SMEs leaders who have been, you know, playing very well during the pandemic, the processes will be changing. We will be living without any doubt in a more digital world where there will be key challenge for them, because on the one hand, they will have to leverage, of course, the potential of the digital technologies and all these new ways of working that we have been living during the pandemic. But at the same time, they also should think about how they can still preserve and protect their relationship. Otherwise, the result would be just a dehumanization of relationships. And so this is leading to rethink somehow the work routine and also the management processes that have become increasingly blending digital and non-digital ones. And the key challenge for organizations is to reflect on how to preserve and develop this distinctive external and internal social capital in presence of digitalized working routines. So we see that many of the SMEs in this new world are reflecting and rethinking their working routines in this direction. During the pandemic, we have been looking at many companies that, for instance, started, you know, converting their production sites or started doing something for society just to help the world to face through this. And we believe that, you know, the SMEs leaders will be facing new trade-offs, like, for instance, the trade-off between health and wealth, between, granting life, ensuring life versus livelihood, between the utility of the individuals within these organizations and the utility of the businesses. And so, this purpose and the tensions between these distinctive trade-offs across different types of goals, we believe will be guiding innovation decisions in this new normal. So, all in all, this conversation, which oftentimes happened in a very informal way and other times, were more structured in a form of a proper interview, led us to, in the end, understand that the SME's capacity to innovate will be very important to respond to the challenge triggered by the COVID-19 pandemic. But, the features of innovation in this new normal, in this new scenario, will be somehow different and will be, calling for, some distinctive challenge, and addressing some challenge will be important for the economic and social future of Europe.
Professor Rouse, the UK has the target to spend £1 in every £3 on SMEs. Does it include the green transition?
The £1 in three, I think, has been lurking around for about 5 years now. So, this is not a new thing, but it's been repeated in various policy documents that come out in waves. First of all, of course, under EU regulation, but now we're outside of EU regulation. Maybe the one and only upside we have is a chance that we could change procurement legislation. The government, I could give you the boring answer, which is that there's something called a procurement policy note, which specifically says that the suppliers to government need to demonstrate that they have a diverse supply chain. So this is, we are finding on the ground, a genuine and real force for change amongst private sector procurers. And they, in fact, are more amenable to actually acting on what we're saying than our public sector procurers, who are all exhausted because of the pandemic, first of all. So innovation isn't their number one thought process. But also because I think the policy drivers on them are somewhat weaker, actually, than they are now on the private sector. So we definitely need for those policy mechanisms to become stronger in order that we can grab the attention of very, very busy procurement teams. Because essentially what they're saying to us is, we want to change. We get it. We buy into it. Your fee to come and work with us is not a problem. What's the problem is our time, because they are now running all sorts of procurement issues because of the pandemic. So there isn't time to stop and think about how the money's being spent or what its wider economic social value might be if they became more inclusive procurers. So on a very, very practical level, that needs to change. But yeah, no, I mean, there are policy drivers, I think, in the EU and in the UK that, in theory at least, are creating this need. And then there's a social values thing. And we're working with a specialist partner who could talk better to this than me. But the way in which tenders are weighted is now at least some percentage towards social value. And in Greater Manchester, we've been talking to the city region about normalising that percentage, because it's very difficult for small firms to work with writing tenders where it's 10% for this council and 30% for that council, etc. So, I mean, this is one of the simplification things that could be done to give more clear messages to small firms. But they do very much need to create, and there's even a kind of guidebook that if you create an apprenticeship, that will be considered this much percentage towards your social value aim and this kind of thing. So there's kind of a little industry growing up to help them to sort of interpret what that means. But there is a real weighting now towards social value in the procurement.
Thank you all very much for your interesting contributions. We look forward to learning more about your future research findings on SMEs and entrepreneurship.